know, it's so funny. I was talking yesterday about how I'm free to do anything, and I said, you know, when we're going to be standing at the dais of Christ, or some of us possibly, but I doubt it, at the great white throne, we're going to smack our heads and say, wow, I could have had a V8. I could have had a V8. I could have had so much fun and been so delivered from worrying about everything. And after saying that, hi everybody, this is Martin Zender. After saying that, you folks probably thought Zender must be living like a crazy guy. He's got all this liberation, so man, he must be swinging naked from the chandeliers. Well, no, I always wear a pair of sandals because I'm afraid of the landing. I'm just kidding. Here's the deal with me, and I kid you not. 1 Corinthians 9:19. For being free of all, I enslave myself to all that I should be gaining the more. I am free of all these trammels. I am free to speak of myself in the first person. I am free to drink wine. I am free to enjoy the opposite sex. I am free to ignore days, weeks, Sabbaths, ceremonies. I am free from constantly analyzing my flesh and putting it under a microscope in the laboratory. And because I'm free, I now enslave myself to all. And I don't do any of these things. You know what a crazy thing is to me? Do you know what I do when I really cut loose? I may stay up till like 11:30 or midnight. Yeah, I may eat a bunch of honey. We got a 5-gallon bucket of honey here at the Pilkingtons. I guess it's like 15 years old. It's been around a while, but as you know, honey never spoils. And they had kind of ignored this thing. I found it because I got a nose for it. I love it. It's raw honey, and I'll just dig in there. And sometimes I'll lose my mind, and I'll just scarf it. It's like my arm, my right arm with a spoon becomes like an auto shovel, just like one after the other. That's what I do when I go nuts. Because I want to walk carefully and circumspectly, I enslave myself to all that I should be gaining the more. I want to gain people. I don't want to give anyone any reason to stumble. So I do not enter into the mansion of my freedoms. I have so many freedoms. My freedom is like a 100-story mansion. And boy, I like to go up there on the top stories and explore everything. But I don't. But it's wonderful just knowing this mansion exists, and then I have access to all these wonderful doors. It's almost like Joe Walsh sings, life's been good to me so far. I got a mansion, forget the price. Ain't never been there, they tell me it's nice. I got a mansion, forget the price. I never been there, they tell me it's nice. I've never been to my mansion, but knowing it's there, is so wonderful. It's like you, let's say you want to build a literal mansion and you just can't wait to have this thing, and you buy an island in Greece. You buy a Greek island, build this mansion. It's your perfect paradise, and you never go there because you just wanted to know that you did it, and now you really rather work, and so you're traveling the world doing your thing. I have all this freedom, and I don't use it for real. I wish I could. Sometimes. I really do, because
I have a mansion, forget the price. Ain't never been there, they tell me it's nice. I live in hotels, tear out the walls. I have a kind.
I don't want to necessarily enslave myself to all that I should be gaining the more, but I find myself in the position Paul is in here, in that I'm under a higher scrutiny than most people because of my position in the ecclesia, so I'm extra careful of that. I haven't forgotten the price of my mansion, by the way. Got a mansion, forget the price. I'm not like Joe Walsh there. I remember the price. The price was Calvary. That's the price of this mansion of freedom I have with the 100 stories. 100 rooms on every story. All these freedoms, but I don't use them. But the only way I can enslave myself to all is that I know I have these freedoms. Otherwise, I would resent my enslavement to all of you. I would resent my careful walk. I would resent being circumspect and trying to win the more, trying not to cause people to stumble. I would resent that. But since I know I got this mansion on the Greek Isle, I'm good with it. Now, I told you we were going to talk about the absolute and the relative perspective, and we are. Philippians 2, 12 and 13. And then I want to talk about the telephone conversation I had, and I hope this does much to liberate you. Philippians 2, verse 12. So that, my beloved, according as you always obey, and don't stumble over that word obey, it's the Greek to hear. Under here are the English elements of the Greek word here translated obey. To hear and to heed. It doesn't mean slavish obedience like a dog would do. So that, my beloved, according as you always obey, not as in my presence only, but now much rather in my absence, with fear and trembling, be carrying your own salvation into effect. This is the relative viewpoint. The root word in the word relative is the word relate. You're relating to other people. And so I'm going to exhort you to work out your own salvation. Tend to it. Live a good life. Live a godly life compared to those other people. Relating you to the other people of the world. Let's be sterling examples of the Christ life. Oh no, Martin, you're bringing us back under law. Paul is bringing us back under law. No, he's not. Because look at this next thing. 4, verse 13, it is God who is operating in you to will as well as to work for the sake of his delight. These things are both true. Work out your own salvation. How can I do that? Well, it's God operating in you. Now, some people won't like this analogy, but if it's God operating in you to will and to work, I'm sorry, but I think of a hand puppet that's animated because there's a hand inside of it causing it to will and to work for the sake of the delight of the one operating it. That's us. Only there's a difference in that we have our own personality, we're our own being, and yet we're animated by Christ. I'm not going to apologize for it. That's what the verse says. God is operating in you to will and to work. That's what it says. That's what I believe. Now, having said that, having understood that absolute viewpoint, you put it in your back pocket and forget about it. I'm serious. You forget about it until something really bad happens and you go back to it and resort to the bedrock truth that whatever just happened had to happen because it was God operating all things. God operates all things. There's a parallel verse, companion verse, Ephesians 1:11. God is operating all things, not just your life, in accord with the counsel of his own will. Not only your life, but everybody else's. You know, those other 9,999,999,000 people. So it's not just you, it's everybody, and that's the only way things could work together for good. So what I do, you know, we have the best of both worlds here. I don't understand the problem with realizing God controls everything. I'm just a robot. No, you're not just a robot. You're a piece of clay. Yes, he's the potter, you're the clay. That's the scriptural analogy. Why would you call yourself a robot? I always agree with people when they say, we're not robots. I always say, yep, you're right. Well, I thought you taught we're robots. No, I never said we're robots. Oh, I heard that you... No. You're giving yourself too much credit. What do you mean you're a robot? Robots blink and move and... They operate out of reach of their owners. We're a hunk of clay. You're giving yourself too much credit to say you're a robot. Let's use a scriptural analogy. I looked up robot in my concordance, and I couldn't find it in either testament. But I did find the word clay, and you would think that something as important as the relationship between God and his creatures, you would think God would give us a detailed picture of it. Well, no, he gives us a simple Sunday school picture that anybody can understand. Romans 9, potter and clay. Potter and clay. He's the potter, we're the clay. Now, I know this is much different than what Christianity says. They say that we're the potter and he's the clay. And if we have faith and pray right, we can make him do what we want. And we can make him save us by believing in him. No, it's the other way around, Christians. He's the potter. You just got that a little mixed up. You just reverse it, then you'll have the truth. It's cool when you get to that point. So I take that truth, put it in my back pocket, and I live as though everything depends on me. That's what I'm talking about. You have the best of both worlds. It's fun to live, and you make decisions, and you say, hey, man, unless I stop at that stop sign, I'm going to die. That's fun. So you stop, and it's who comes up to a stop sign and says, oh, boy, I hope God makes me put my foot on the brake, because unless God makes me put my foot on the brake, I'm not going to stop, and I'm going to die. Nobody thinks about that while it's happening. But you can resort to that after something happens. That's why I say. Put the absolute verse in your pocket. Bring it out when you need it, because it's always there. You resort to it when things go to hell. But when you're living, you live as if life, as if everything depends on you. Live as if it depends on you, because that's where we learn things. That's the interplay of good and evil that tries us and all that good stuff. Now, I was on the telephone with a woman from California, and I felt bad for her because she felt like, Martin, I can't express myself. And here's why. And this applies to a lot of things across the board. It's performance anxiety, because in our minds, let's say the mind of a writer, I'll speak for myself. As a writer, I sometimes stare at that blank screen, and there's nothing more intimidating than a blank screen or a blank piece of paper. And you tell yourself, I have to write the most stupendous opening sentence that's ever been written in the history of literature. I have to write a great article. So no wonder you sit there and stare at the screen, because you've given yourself such a high bar, such an impossible standard, that you're going to write one sentence, you're going to rework it hundreds of times, and you're not you're going to stare at that screen for a long time, unless you do something that I'm going to tell you about real quick here. Now, let's take the example of a painter. A painter staring at a blank canvas. I have to paint a masterpiece. This is a real life anecdote here. I don't know if many of you know this, but who's the guy who is the English Prime Minister? This is England's finest hour. Winston Churchill. He was also a very accomplished painter. Well, one day, Winston Churchill was staring at a canvas sitting in his front yard, and he was trying to paint sky. He was going to do a landscape starting out with the sky. He couldn't figure out how to do it. He just stared and stared at that canvas. It was painter's block. Performance anxiety. So in comes this woman. I can't remember her name. It was a friend of his who was also a painter, and she said, "What you doing, Winnie? What you doing, Winnie?" "I'm trying to paint a picture." And she said, and this, he said, I'll never forget what happened next. He explained his problem to her. She took the brush out of his hand, slapped it in the blue paint, and just started stroking that canvas and painting the blue sky there. Start with that, she said. And he said, I never had painter's block after that. You just start. You get rid of all expectations of yourself and all of your public's expectations. You give yourself freedom to screw up. You give yourself the liberty to make mistakes, and you just go for it, being perfectly willing to paint the worst sky ever painted, or to produce the worst sentence in the English language. Once you're willing to do that, you go back and edit later. You make it pretty later. Writers will tell you, you don't want to write with your editing hat on, and you don't want to edit with your writer's hat on. In other words, you have to be creative first. You have to cut that marble out of the quarry. You have to quarry that marble. That's what Michelangelo did. Sure, he quarried the marble, threw down a huge chunk of marble, and he whittled away at that. He wasn't careful when he got the quarried marble. He just threw the slab of marble down. But same thing with a writer. You just throw a slab of words down. Just get it out. Don't edit yourself. Don't be careful. Painter, same way. Just, Winnie, put your brush in the frickin' blue paint and start up a sky. You can fix it later, but flow with it. Now, I'm applying this to your life, and I gave this truth to the woman on the phone. Live freely. Just splatter the canvas of life with experiences, with motions, with actions, with words. Don't be careful. I've always said, I guess this counts. Does this apply? It's better to apologize for something than to ask for permission. And I think that's true. I've said things. I walked the line. Oh, yeah. Sometimes because I walk the line, because I am living on the edge, I sometimes step over it. And I recognize it when I do it. Well, that's true. I don't sometimes. Sometimes it has to be pointed out to me. For instance, I used the S word in my last newsletter. How did I use it? I was talking about my shock to find out that a certain word was used in a certain context, and I said I nearly S'd. Anyway, somebody pointed out to me, I can't read a newsletter that uses the S word. And I realized, oops, you know, maybe that was gratuitous. I was trying to be humorous because I thought, how funny. I was in the midst of this very, very scholarly exposition about a particular Hebrew word. And I thought, how incongruent. And I love incongruence. I think incongruence is the finest form of humor. I thought, how incongruent to throw this word right in here and just wreck everything. I thought it was funny. I laughed out loud. But I realized, you know, I could say it a better way, and so I took it out. I took it out and I changed it. I'm always willing to admit when I've made a mistake. You see, it's easy to admit you're wrong when it happens so infrequently. So so I fixed it. So that's the idea that you can edit later. You can apologize later. You're not going to purposely try to hurt people. All I'm saying is live like there's no tomorrow, because there might not be. I hope this helps you to free yourself from all these self-edits. Quarry yourself a marble slab. You can chisel it as you go. You may have to sweep up some pieces. You might accidentally knock the nose off of your creation, but hey, that's what super glue's for.